Hi, everyone. And sorry, we're a wee bit late. We had some technical issues, but it happens to the best of us, and it usually happens to me. welcome to the PYA webinar, A Medical On Board. We have a great panel of guests for you today. And to be honest, I mean, it's a topic that I don't think is spoken about quite often enough when we talk about the yachting and super yacht industries. I'd like to introduce each and every one. We have Corinne Rayson. She is from The Crew Coach and as well covers everything to do with mental health. Corinne, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I serve crew from the moment they enter the industry to when they are ready to exit. My background is in psychology, organizational psychology, and counseling. And I offer online counseling for crew as well as array of different services. I don't stop. I love serving and I love supporting crew, but that's just me in a nutshell in a very brief form.
Thank you. And we have Captain Brendan O'Shaughnessy. Now, you feature quite often when it comes to things, all things on board and mental health especially, but welcome. And if you could just tell us a bit about you.
Thanks, Rhea. Just a seafarer that has been at sea for a few decades now. And in this room today with Simon, Corinne, and Sarah, three medical in their field professionals, I represent the captains and crew out there with the little training, very good, but we are not the professionals out there, always needing to be supported. Sometimes we're a long way from support. So what I hope to bring is a little bit of perspective of the concerns that crew have out there when they're a long way from the professionals that we have on the call today and the support pathways that we look for.
Thank you. And we have Sarah Patterson. She is a yacht medic. Tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, so ex-yacht nurse, started as a nurse due many years ago. Sadly, can't sail away for a few months at a time anymore because I've got a little four-year-old. I'm a long-suffering yacht wife as well, so doing it on my own most of the time. Background in critical care, worked in King's College Hospital, London, and last year ended up in the Nightingale London Excel as a nurse educator. But really my field now is education. So I provide pre-season medical training for the yacht crew, and I'm just actually partnering with MSOS to offer the SDCW training as well. So nurse education within yachting is my passion.
That's amazing. And we have, last but not least, Dr. Simon Gordon. You are a general practitioner. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so my name's Simon Gordon. I work in a GP practice in Valbonne that has served the yachting industry in the Côte d'Azur for many years. Dr. Patrick Island and Dr. Chris Bess have been doing ENG1s for about three decades here. My other background is that I've got quite a lot of experience in what we call pre-hospital care. I was in the paratroopers, so I know what it's like to have sick people who are far away from a hospital and either have to be evacuated by helicopter or can't be evacuated for various reasons. And also the past couple of years, I've had a lot of experience in sort of remote monitoring and was one of the people who was involved in setting up sort of what we call virtual wards for COVID, started in Northwest London and sort of spread across the United Kingdom. So how do you look after people when they're actually not with the doctor, which I think has a lot of implications for the yacht industry.
Thank you. Well, let's get into the meat of this. Now, we always think about things like, what are we going to do for provisioning? Is the vessel seaworthy? But you don't see a lot of people discussing the fact that there is so much that goes into pre-planning when it comes to the medical, and perhaps it's not looked at as closely as it should be. Let's start with the ENG1. What is it and why does it exist? Perhaps Dr. Simon can answer that.
Sure. So the ENG1 essentially is looking at your health and whether you, how and what you can do on a boat. So it's really, in some ways, it's, I will have to say I'm the other doctors do the ENG1s in my practice, but it's looking at your vision. It's looking at your, whether you can see colors, which obviously has implications when you're working on a boat, and your general health. And then And then from there, deciding what role you can take on the boat. And that with the ENG one, that is very clearly defined by the MCA in the UK.
You know, you raised a point there. Now, what if somebody is colorblind?
So with you, essentially certain positions you can't do on a boat. If you don't know the difference between green and red, I think Brendan can go on and sort of explain the technicalities of it more than me. I don't know if you want to sort of take over about the sort of implications of that on the boat.
No, I think it's quite a, that there are so many people that you meet whose career has been changed because of male colorblindness, more so males, but quite a lot of people whose careers have changed because of colorblindness. Absolutely, Simon.
And there are certain roles that they can't hold then.
I think basically port or starboard is not to deconstruct navigation training, but it's kind of 101. It's first day stuff.
Okay. Let me ask, how well trained are crew normally in medical issues? And what training would you recommend on board? You know, you never know what's going to happen or when it's going to happen. Are crew traditionally trained appropriately to handle an incident on board? Sarah?
Yeah, probably could come into this one. I mean, I think that there is a basic level of medical training within the industry, which is great. I think any training is better than none. But I really advocate for pre-season medical training. Few reasons, mainly though, because crew are changing a lot. The crews I've been changing in the last week or so, they know their medical skills. They have a memory of their last training, but it's just getting that muscle memory back so that if they were under the stress response, they could recall those skills and then work as a medical response team. And it really takes a few scenarios on each training day to get them working effectively as a team. And from my background in critical care, you learn that survival is one thing, but a good recovery is another. And it's really key. And if I was the one injured on board, I would want to be given the best chance of a good recovery. So, for example, if you pull someone out of the water, they've drowned, they're not breathing, you start CPR, they're very likely to vomit. About 86% of people will vomit in that scenario. There are things you can do to prevent that vomit going into their lungs and prevent that lung infection after the event. So there are things, and it's usually the immediate response. So it's things that the crew will have to do before they're on the phone to telemed, because you have to do them quickly. You're talking seconds and minutes. And that crew just need that confidence to do those actions and do them confidently and not prevent any harm to that person. And that really takes training as a team together. And with crew changing so much, I really advocate for a pre-season, just a half day or preferably a full day, just to get your crew working as that team again. I think it's key.
Well, I mean, I have to agree with you, because I have done webinars in the past in service, and they talk about the need to train interior crew to the point where, because you're working so many hours, that service is just second nature. You don't even think about it. But no one's ever had that conversation about the medical care on board. And realistically, far from service, the medical care, you've got seconds. You know, it's not something that you've got a minute or two to think about. It's literally seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. And these things, I think most crew just cross their fingers and hope it doesn't happen. And obviously I really hope it doesn't happen to any crew, but there are multiple calls. So I used to work for a big telemedical company. There are multiple calls for both minor and major things every week. So it is happening. And unfortunately you do need to have that preparation, that training ready to go, and you just can't learn these skills under that stress response, so they need to be there already and fresh in your mind.
Now, what are the standard things to have on board? I mean, the things that even before you plan your passage, you know, you don't know what guests are going to be on board, but what are absolutely the very minimum basics that you will need on board? Simon, would you have an answer to that?
It's actually difficult for me to say that. I know that there is definitions of what needs to be on board. And from my understanding, and again, I'm quite new to industry, there's a huge differential of what boats do have on board. You know, there's boats, what I understand, have doctors on board and have a full kit. And again, you know, when you're flying, my understanding is when you fly under a certain flag, there is a different definition of what you have, and size of your boat and things like that, and how far you're going. Brendan could probably tell you more than that. But interestingly enough, having looked at that, that's obviously sort of defined by somebody, you know, it's defined as probably as what, as, you know, it's defined a while ago. And it's probably not the best things at this moment in time. I can see Brendan nodding very much, so I probably don't know what he thinks.
No, Simon, look, I agree with you. I'll circle back to Sarah here as well. What I've seen in yachts from the equipment standpoint is there is that basic marine orders, that's what you must have. Yachts are so far above that in their equipment, and we're not here to endorse providers, but all of the major providers give incredible equipment. It's laid out so well. So it's almost to the point where the equipment far exceeds the training capacity of the people on board. So you have, and not just your large infirmaries on, everyone has a story of this great infirmary, that you've got to be able to use all this with a team cohesion, with muscle memory, and be able to do it taking voice instruction over a phone, over a video link. And, you know, the fog of war, nothing brings that sharper than the first contact with the enemy. I think you'll find the mariners out there that have had an incident or two, they really sharpen their focus and realize, hang on, this isn't a classroom thing we're doing. But to get to Ria's point on the equipment, I would say, and Sarah, I know you'd be involved in the supply, the equipment is so good now. It scares me how much is possible there.
Yeah, it is amazing. I'm quite interested in the new technology, the new medical technology coming out. But one thing that people have to consider, and why it's really good to get a maritime medical professional to talk to you about your equipment, is that it has to be appropriate for the yachting environment. So things like the waterproofing, things like the durability, because it's been going to be on board a long time, possibly in salt water. How you get the supply of the consumables, so the batteries or whatever you need to function. And that's something we do cover in the training as well. We just make sure it's all working, that there's no sort of valves or pumps missing, that it's pulled out, it's checked, and it just puts your mind at rest that it's all there ready to go when in that moment when you don't want to be scrabbling around trying to find a little valve for your vacuum splints. So yeah, I think definitely get a medical professional with a maritime background to look at your equipment, to review it, to make sure it's all working, which can be done as part of training. And then just keep checking it, keep pulling it out and using it. Because I think a lot of this stuff does stay in a cupboard somewhere for a long time. And it's not easy to make sure it's okay when it's not looked at for a long time.
Do you find that equipment will change in accordance to the length of your passage or the age of your guests or the different medical concerns of your guests?
I think, Ria, yes, in one word, but I don't know if you want to be shaping what you have to this week's group of people on board, because next week it might be different. Obviously, when people join, it's very standard practice to gain preconditions. So you're aware of allergies, any other concerns. That's very standard. But I do think you have to be a generalist. Yachts don't run on a liner route where they go through the same three ports. You have to be able to turn around and go international at a drop of a hat, receive this week aged care, next week youth. It's part of the business of operating a yacht.
Well, let's head over to COVID. I mean, of course, everyone, that's been the biggest issue of the last year and a half. And I think, you know, it's just something that we're going to have to keep our eyes on in the future forever. What do you think about the testing prior to travel for crew and guests? Is that essential before anybody gets on board?
Oh, look, I'll grab it in there to take the silence. Look, there's various solutions. I see I've been recently on tour visiting a few different yachts, all have different processes, all are very responsible. It might be time to hear from Corinne here, because this is, I think, the COVID, we've got the physical stage, but I think the bigger one that we're managing out there is mental health of seafarers due to COVID. The actual physical risk on seafarers, I think, and Sarah, Simon, maybe speak to this, but is being handled exceptionally well above all national obligations. What we're having is a slow burn on mental health there. Corinne, is that okay as an introduction?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Brendan. With regards to that specifically, I think crew are not getting the time off that they need. So they are staying on board for a longer period of time, which is becoming really taxing on their mental health. They are away from their positive support network, which is vital to maintain well-being. And also the nature of the position, it is very, very stressful doing back-to-backs. I'm hearing a lot of people suffering from strokes, unfortunately, as a result of stress. And maybe Simon can speak about that as well. I do want to circle round to Simon Rhea, if that's okay, because first I want to put my hand up. I was the one who was having tech difficulties. I'm so sorry. But Simon, I'm just fascinated to know from your perspective, because I get a lot of questions from crew asking about this. Do you assess for mental health as part of the ENG one?
So there are questions about mental health in the ENG one. Whether how people answer them is a different aspect. And then I think there's a whole thing about, you know, you can see someone, they've had no mental health problems in the past. And obviously your environment has a lot to do with your mental health. And I can imagine, you know, putting somebody into what is a relatively closed environment far from home can essentially trigger mental health problems. You know, mental health is something we all have, you know, it's something that you know, someone says, have you got mental health problems? Well, do you have physical health problems? Well, of course we all do, to a greater or lesser extent. So it is part of the ENG one. You know, how much into detail people go, you know, people just ask a few questions, and people are meant to say the truth and people are meant to sign off the truth. So the doctors who are doing the ENG one are obviously, you know, limited by what people tell them.
How do you assess that risk though?
So in the ENG one, it's just a medical history, essentially. It's saying, have you had any mental health problems in the past? Right. And it takes in the whole, so the ENG one doesn't involve some deep dive into your mental health. And it's interesting because I'm thinking about it from a, you know, my background, which is a military background. And essentially what happens is you have something which is very similar to the ENG one. And then you're put through a very stressful environment with a team for a long period of time before you would even think about putting someone into that situation. So, you know, roughly who's going to cope and who's not going to cope. And then in my experience, in that when you do put people into those super stressful situations, even people who have had training sometimes, or their mental health suddenly goes. I don't know how that sort of goes with what you see in the maritime world, Corinne.
Yeah, I'm just trying to ascertain the risk assessment that's being made with regards to a pre-existing issue. I literally got a message from someone today. Her ENG one was declined because she was honest. And it becomes an ethical dilemma. I get it. Mm. She was honest. And she said that she had experienced anxiety in the past. Mm. As a result, it was declined. She could not apply for an ENG one for another year. Mm-hmm. So she's going back in December and she's asking for advice on what to say in her medical consultation. I asked for some context around how long she's been experiencing anxiety, whether she's taking medication. She hasn't started any medication. She was offered beta blockers, but she never felt the need to take. Mm-hmm. But she has general anxiety.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
she's more likely to not disclose because then she's not going to get her email. How do you deal with that? Like, what do you have to say to that?
First of all, I would say, you know, in any sort of occupational health situation, you know, we're thinking not necessarily about the individual, we're thinking about the team. So obviously I can't go into details because I don't know who the person is, and I'd say I'm not a qualified, you know, my practice does the ENG one, so I'm not, you know, there's other people who know more about it, but you know, one has to, you know, the person who's signing off the ENG one is taking responsibility for that individual and for what happens on the boat. It's not a sort of deep dive into your one's mental health. And you know, as I think, you know, for the captains, it's probably better to be safer, you know. You know, if someone starts having, for example, a panic attack deep at sea, you know, it's impossible for a doctor to sometimes know exactly what's going on in a panic attack, whether it's a panic attack or something else. So it's a very complicated situation, and I can understand that whoever's doing that assessment is probably thinking through the sort of possible scenarios, and, you know, making it safe for everyone involved.
Yeah, like, I'm very passionate about it, and it's quite close to my heart. And I just feel a bit frustrated by the procedure, and that's why I asked for more information in terms of, are you taking medication? Because a mental health issue becomes problematic when they can't be productive, so they can't do their normal work duties or day-to-day duties or make a positive contribution to the community, which the World Health Organization defines mental health. So if they, as you said, like, we all have some, we may have some mental health issue, we may experience anxiety if we have a narcissistic captain that we're dealing with, that can trigger anxiety, and that person has to deal with it. And I know that crew have been physically ill on board, vomiting as a result of poor leadership, which is bringing on these mental health issues, and the doctors on board are prescribing medication to manage anxiety. It's a really interesting topic for conversation, I must say.
I totally see that, Corinne, and definitely as well, there's a risk involved in not just sort of from the person's point of view, from the crew's point of view. I've got a captain friend at the moment whose owner has decided he wants to stop taking his anxiety medication so he can drink all summer. So having someone on board with a pre-existing mental health issue that's not being managed very well, or maybe it's a crew member who can't speak up about it and get the help they need, if it escalates and it's not caught early, you know, there's a risk involved. There's a risk to that person and the crew. And, you know, then it's becoming more of an emergency response, and crew need to know and have training in how to recognize when things are escalating.
Yes. And that's why we need, and I think that's why we need a seamless continuum of care model. So we're looking at the preventative measures as well. So yes, okay, we've done your ENG in one, there's mild anxiety. What are we going to do to manage it? What do you need to stay safe? Are the crew on board trained? You know, are we equipped to deal with these issues and support one another? Where's the communication here? Brendan, your hand's up. Can't wait to hear from you.
Brendan, your audio's off.
Corinne, that's a... lovely place to segue. There is a mechanism out there for crew, and this might be, Simon, this might be new for you, which I think is underutilized. There is an obligation to have a monthly safety meeting. And in that, you recognize unsafe work practices. Lifting, that is too heavy. This is a legal obligation. Those records must go to the shore-based company. Action must, it's recorded. In there, if there are pressures in, and the crew must be represented by all layers, it's a very structured mechanism. In that forum, there is a place where the person doesn't have to be first person, can be third person, so it anonymizes the comment. But where pressures in the workplace or the lack of room for general health self-care, it can be logged. So that's an interesting one for people to realize they have a mechanism. I, in several decades at sea, have been in yachting and commercial, and it's super important on a commercial vessel where there might be an enormous power distance culture and the crew feel they do not have the chance to speak out. This is the reason why we have safety meetings. So it is a powerful tool for crew when they want to speak up on all sorts of issues. One of Rhea's points were, what is self-care while at sea? Well, it's Corinne's word, it's a continuum. It's rest, it's diet, it's exercise, it's communicate space to communicate privately to people off the vessel. It's all those personal hygiene. It's all of those things put in together. And yachts provide a wonderful environment to deliver on every point. Absolutely. And they're getting better all the time. But when it does come unstuck, as Corinne mentioned, where she's had people calling in, that's where we have tools such as the safety meeting to report it. So just to put that tool in there for anyone that sees this and goes, that's all great, but how do I make this work for me?
So Brendan, is that mandatory safety meeting?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's different to drills or anything like
that? Yep, it's a safety committee meeting every month. The captain must attend. I'll send in the notes later a little bit about it, but it's just there to give safety information and to receive. For example, on every safety meeting on a yacht, the bags going out in the garbage are too heavy and people are hurting their back. That might as well just be there. But it can be so much more. If we're having repetitive injuries, we're having hygiene issues, there can be so much more. Food, rarely on yachts, to be fair, because our standards are so high. But it is definitely a place to speak out anonymously. It gets the designated person ashore by legal definition, has access to the highest decision makers of the ship's owning entity. And that puts everyone on notice that they have to do something. They have to close that off. It sits there. It can't just be ignored. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a tool.
Brendan, what are the ways of people getting advice while at sea?
Well, at the first one is realize you've got a crew together. So maybe it's just from your peers. All vessels now, pretty much everyone has, you can't always stream videos of cats, but you're online all the time. So there are shore-based resources where you can email and respond. We're not in critical care. I'm not going to talk about that, but most vessels have either a digital or physical library where they are obliged to carry medical resources. Use that. The larger yachts, Sarah, carry a nurse. Wow, that's a huge resource, and not just for the pure physical care. That gives a safe place to have a conversation. Corinne and people like Corinne are now helping train and support whether they're called safeguarding officers or persons of trust on board, they are there. Most responsible management companies, in addition to the DPA, put up someone there to call. Cross-gender, you know, if you wish to have a gender-specific pathway to speak to. There's so many layers out there. But I think for all the crew is to work those out before the critical day comes. I don't want to be speaking to Sarah, Simon and Corinne as the emergency's unfolding. If I could have foreseen it last week and had a relaxed conversation.
That's
right. There's a stigma that comes along with anybody that has any mental health issues. I mean, for example, they could go on board. They don't, you know, maybe they've had a history of flight anxiety, et cetera. But after, you know, weeks and weeks at sea, straight off, in close quarters with other people, they admit to having a panic attack, or they admit to anxiety, or they admit to feeling depressed. Does a stigma come across with that, you know, as far as being labeled dramatic or, you know, unemployable for the future? Is that still rampant, or is that something that we see with the amount of talk that we have going on around mental health? Is that starting to go away?
I think it's still there, you know. I think that there's two things we've got to look at here. I mean, one is the individual, right? And people can and can't do certain roles because of their physical attributes, because of their mental health attributes. That is how things are. And then there is the boat, the vessel, you know, the group. People are in it. There is, certainly is a stigma. It's not something that people talk about. I always say to people who take antidepressants that you probably know a lot of people who take antidepressants, but they're just not telling you. Or the same goes for basic therapy. You know, it's acceptable to say that you are using Headspace or Calm or whatever it is. And it's much less acceptable to say that I've just, you know, gone through, cognitive behavioral therapy, or I'm doing psychoanalysis, but ultimately we're all doing it for the same reason, right? Which is to feel better. So I think the stigma still exists. You know, the minute you said, as I said, you say mental health, everyone goes, oh! You say physical health and everybody goes, well, that's normal. So, but I think the situation at sea is very specific. And that's not like being at home, and that goes both for physical health and both for mental health. That influences, you know, that people like Brendan are responsible for everything that goes on. They are not doctors, and that, you know, that has to be considered.
I think the assessment, I totally agree, Simon. I think the assessment side of mental health could be better. Because if you look at the hospital environment, obviously it's filled with nurses, so it's probably quite a compassionate view. But the job is demanding in a hospital, night shifts, you're looking after very sick people, you have to be alert, you have to be ready to do the job. But we have occupational health. You go there, you get assessed. Are you fit to do the job or not? From a mental health perspective and a physical health perspective. And I think that would be nice to see more of that on a regular basis, to say, okay, you do have a mental health issue, but you are actually fit and physically and mentally well to do the job. So let's manage it and let you do the job. And rather than just sort of this writing off or saying, let's wait a year and reassess, you know, let's see where you are on a more regular basis.
I really agree on all of those. I do think health is one headline, and physical and mental just sit in there. I think there is still stigmas about physical health on board. There is a lot less yachts out there with professional nurses than without. So your professional medical person is someone like myself, maybe the captain, maybe the chief officer. If they're your direct report, it's always going to be a little bit hard. Or maybe it's just something that's physically embarrassing. So I think there's a big onus on the senior team to normalize all sorts of conversations. When you were speaking before, I remembered a great deck crew member who I said, "You're moving awkwardly." "No, I'm fine." Apparently it's very common. Someone might be able to tell me. He had an ingrown hair at the base of his spine. He was so embarrassed, he was trying to treat it himself. It looked like a shotgun wound. It was serious. He needed to be taken off, and he was in critical care because he was embarrassed. So I took that on and began in crew meetings and to try and normalize conversation. He didn't want to come and see me about that. It was embarrassing. So I think the important thing, or recently a wonderful engineering crew member who I noticed with a limp. I said, "What's wrong?" His knee was shot. He thought he would lose his job if he reported the injury. Came from a culture where there was a strong power distance gap. I said, no. Here's your contractual rights. You have employment rights. Oh, wow. Knee was treated, fixed, back to work. Everyone wins. I think the education out there can never stop. It's better today than it was yesterday, and it'll be better tomorrow. But it just can't stop. And whether that comes from the three professionals here, but for those out there trying to hold it together, just the more education that can go out, the better, so that crew members feel confident to speak on mental, physical health, that it isn't going to end their employment, because that's the crux. If I report this, be that I have anxiety, be it that my knee is causing me pain every day, or an embarrassing physical condition, is it going to end my employment? And if you can be told, no, you're going to be supported, that's huge. Corinne.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. And I think we should be asking ourselves, when it comes to stigma, how are we contributing to that stigma? You know, what responsibilities can we embark on to change it and challenge it and change the culture? And that's why it's so important to ask, well, how can I support you? Because if there's no psychological safety at sea, no one's going to go, hey, suffering from anxiety, I need help. They're not going to do it. And it's the same. If I know that, okay, maybe I suffer from mild anxiety, but if I get told that I won't be able to work for a year, and I know we all have a duty of care, not only like for the rest of the team, but would I be honest and say, I've got anxiety because I know I'm not going to get a job. So that's why it's so important to look at the continuum as well. Like, are you taking medication for it? How long have you had the anxiety for? And for us, you know, what can we do to change the culture and break down that stigma? And it's about talking about it in this open platform and know that there are no consequences. What's so interesting, and I can only speak from here in Australia because that's where I am, you're not allowed to ask in an interview, job interview, if you've got a mental health issue. It's just discrimination. You're not allowed to ask. Isn't that interesting?
It's tough. Do you think, Corinne, that part of it is because crew are starting to feel replaceable?
I think they've always been replaceable.
Yes.
And so if they admit one tiny weakness of any sort, such as Brennan said, whether it be physical or mental, then they won't have a job, period. Well, we'll have to continue conversations like these in order to make it better, you know, better spoken about and easier for people to come forward and let them know, is there somewhere that a link that we can provide later when we do re-air this webinar? Is there a link we can provide for those that are experiencing mental health issues that don't want to talk to, say, their captain or anybody on board? But there are links that they can contact anonymously, no?
Yeah.
There's multiple, Ria, and it'll be great to put those in the notes. Some of it, and I'm not giving a plug for Corinne because she's on this call, it's some of it might not be the critical helpline. It's just having someone professional to speak to. And those services are out there also. And it might take a personal investment from that person as part of their care. You have a gym membership to lift weights if that's your thing. This is just the other side of that. And I think that facility now, which wasn't there in the past, is open and available to crew. And I was recently in a crew mess, which heartened me incredibly, where two people were just speaking openly about it. That, oh, yes, I've used that counsellor. It's fantastic. Really helped me through. And I went, this is great. This is where we've come to. That conversation would not have happened a few years ago. Absolutely not. The path might not have even been there. But now the path is there and the conversation was happening. That might be an outlier, I accept that. But that's where it starts. And it's so much better now with people, those few people having those conversations like this where, and pathways such as Sarah, Corinne, and Simon, there are physical and mental health professionals out there for yacht crew. Like you might have a financial advisor or you'd know the number for the mechanic of your car, but you, so...
Yeah, I get Simon, talking to me on training days even. So they want to have a quiet word with me around the corner. They just want to open up and share about their experience. Maybe they have faced a medical incident on board and just didn't get that release of discussing with someone who really understands. And what came to mind when you were talking actually is the bullying scenario. So, I mean, the safety meeting is brilliant. And I think that's a really great place. but also there needs to be a place that's independent outside of that, in that bullying scenario where someone can't speak up because the person's sitting right there and they don't have the confidence to, they think they're going to lose their job. And just having those independent routes of support is really important, I think.
Simon had a hand up there for a moment.
First of all, I think the PYA actually can support people on these things. I know that there's people helping on that. And the, what Brendan mentioned about pathways, you know, in all health, we often think about pathways, you know, so it's clear for people what to do and for people to sort of have ways of thinking about things that makes life a lot easier. So in emergencies, you know, we go ABC, airway, breathing, circulation. And that happens. The story is that somebody was in a situation where someone was dying and they didn't have a way of thinking about it. And this way has developed and it's taken hold and it's obviously helped lots of people save lives since then. It was interesting because we were talking about mental health. Mental health, we don't have a clear, it's not an easy way where we can just say follow ABC as yet. So, you know, I think that there's a place here, you know, to create what, you know, pathways for problems. So it's clear for clear ways of people having help in these situations.
Yep, agreed.
I want to bring, we're sort of heading towards the end of the hour here, but I wanted to bring things back to this COVID situation because, of course, we are, you know, in the midst of this. We're all getting back to the new normal. What are things to look out for in the case that someone may have COVID, and what steps do you take in that case?
I'll come in. So COVID's a really interesting illness because, you know, a lot of us know people have had it, and it doesn't seem that serious for some people, but it can be serious for people. And when you're in a sort of situation where there's a lot of people in a closed area, obviously you create a risky environment. So I would look, I don't know what policies people have, but it makes a lot of sense to make sure that people are vaccinated before they get on a boat. It makes a lot of sense to have a clear policy about when somebody has symptoms that could be COVID. I think people need to realize that testing is not perfect, especially if you're using lateral flow testing as opposed to serology. It can both have false positives and false negatives. So these are things which, you know, 3 years ago were things that were talking about medical exams and are now on the news. So people have to understand what that means. And then what happens if on the boat, if someone does have COVID? And then when someone does have COVID, what's really interesting about COVID is that people can be reasonably well for a period of time. And then at day 7, they can just crash. I was actually talking to Sarah about it previously about how actually well people can look at one point where what's called their observations, their oxygen levels can be absolutely terrible. And when COVID first came out, we didn't know what to do. So, but now we actually do have treatments. So, you know, it's really interesting. Has anyone thought about whether someone is in the middle of the Atlantic and their saturations, what's called this, their oxygen levels are dropping? I think IV steroids are on the list of medicines that you're meant to have. Well, that's been proven to help in COVID. You know, that sort of stuff is having, we talked about pathways. I mean, creating pathways about what happens. How do you prepare a boat beforehand? What do you do when someone has it on board? What's your monitoring protocol afterwards? You know, these are things that we, you know, I've been involved on a sort of national level. So I don't see any reason why it can't happen on a boat level.
Sarah?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with Simon. I think we just need to be more confident in just asking a few questions of someone who we notice is different. We all know our crews very well. We even know some of the owners and guests very well. And if you see different behavior, it could be similar to the way you pick up a stroke. You notice a change. You ask some questions, you know, how is your sleep? How are you eating? You know, has something happened in your life that's changed? And, you know, have you had a hard time recently? Just being confident to ask those questions and not just think, oh, they'll pick up or things will get better. I think it's really important. And especially I've been close to someone who suffered from mental health issues and he just felt very alone and there wasn't really anyone asking. So they just assumed he was fine until he really wasn't. And it was very far down the line at that point. He needed medication. He took a long time to recover, 6 months, a year. But I just feel like if somebody had picked that up earlier, it might have just prompted him to go and get the help he needed at an earlier stage, and not requiring that medication and long-term care. And obviously the time off work as well.
Simon, you have your hand up.
Can I just comment on for the captains as well with COVID? We talked about stigma. Now, everyone with a cough has a stigma, essentially. Everyone is scared because they might have COVID, but actually they might have COVID. You know, and when you're in that closed environment, that is tricky. So, you know, and we say, you know, anyone who has a, you know, a cough after a certain amount of time, well, how do you treat that in a closed environment? You know, in a nursing home, which in a physical perspective, isn't that different from what happens, you know, very quickly people are sort of closed off and tested to understand what's going on. So, you know, it'd be really interesting to know what's going to happen on boats. And, you know, we don't know if it's over. People make a lot of assumptions about the vaccine and what's going to happen. This is developing literally week by week. You know, for example, in Britain, which is doing amazingly at the moment, there's this new variant and no one knows how it's going to play out over the next couple of weeks.
Simon, let me ask you, what are the signs that nobody really knows to look for? You know, as you say, a cough or we know the fever, that kind of thing. But are there things that nobody's really talking about that we can keep an eye out for to sort of see the early signs of onset of COVID?
Yes. So a classic one, which is probably quite notable in a boat that's got nice food, is loss of sense of smell. Hmm. That's a very weird thing to just happen. And people don't really think much, oh, I've lost sense of smell, and they carry on. That's like, there's very few illnesses that do that on such a acute level. So, you know, that's something that you need to look out for. Actually, there is actually other symptoms. There can be bowel symptoms as well, diarrhea, but that starts getting much more tricky, you know, because then you're sort of overlying other symptoms. And also, when you make a diagnosis in the context of a pandemic, which means that when a lot of people have the same thing, it's much easier to make the diagnosis. But the first person, that's the difficulty. So that first person who's in on the boat, you need to think very carefully about what you're going to do with them.
Brendan, you have your hand up.
Yeah, look, bringing in Simon's comments and Sarah's and definitely Corinne, there's a comment that a lot of captain has a night order book for bridge watch keepers. And there's a very ubiquitous sentence in there. And it says, if in doubt, take action and call. It's just one of those. And I think on the COVID and general health, if there was one bit of advice where I have failed over the years, it's where I felt, if I just clip the corner here, I can keep the show going. Yeah, I can just brush this through. There's a lot of commercial pressure. There is a high, potentially you have a charter that's now running into seven digits. There's a lot of pressure to keep that show running. If in doubt, take action. If this person, maybe they have COVID, but maybe they don't, and maybe they do an important job and I can't replace them tomorrow. So take action early. It's just such, it's easy for me. I'm at home right now. It's so easy to say that. I'm not feeling the pressure of the whole momentum of the vessel. But I think, and then those of us behind supporting yachts and around the place need to acknowledge that. You know, there's a lovely comment, which is a bit of a metaphor for life in the collision regulations. Action to avoid collision, bold, early, and apparent. It's just a lovely little metaphor for life. When we have any of these incidents or suspected incidents, it's to support our captains and crews making hard decisions early. And COVID's a classic. If you have to lock down the whole vessel, do so. I think that's the toughest thing. Again, so easy for me to say, not standing on the bridge right now.
Well, I'm going to say to anybody out there that has any questions, please do feel free to ask these questions now as well. We will provide links that you can contact any of these people directly. I have a feeling that there is much more to be said in regards to mental health. And I think that there is a need to do a webinar completely on mental health. You know, it's been done before, but it's not quite gotten through. And from, you know, the meat of what we've spoken about today, I think it's definitely something that we do need to address in its entirety. I know Corinne has she's got her finger on the pulse, as it were, in that matter. So I think we'll have to have most of you back, or all of you back, to have that discussion at some stage. Does anybody else have anything that they would like to add?
I just want to acknowledge Faraz for his contributions today, because it's not easy to speak up, and he's been very vocal and shared lived experiences. So thank you so much, Faraz, for that.
Yeah, in the chat.
Yeah, Faraz, he's quite on top of many of the things that the PYA does, and very involved. And it's lovely to see somebody that will interact and be part of what we're doing. So we thank you. Right. Well, I am going to say thank you very much. I know that Dr. Gordon has an appointment coming up quickly. He does actually have an office that he's running with patients. So I am going to say thank you ever so much, Sarah, for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Rhea. It's lovely to be here today.
And of course, Dr. Gordon, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
And Captain Brendan O'Shaughnessy.
Thanks, Rhea. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. And of course, last but not least, Corinne, you are invaluable, and we always appreciate when you give us your time.
Thanks for inviting me. Lovely to connect with everyone and to meet some really inspiring individuals that want to make a positive impact. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And stay tuned for the next PYA webinar. We'll, of course, let you know when that happens and what the topic will be. Maybe mental health, who knows? Perhaps if you're all free in a month's time, we'll do another one and specifically stick with mental health, because I think there's a lot more that needs to be said. And, you know, 15, 20 minutes isn't quite enough time. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. Please tune in again next time.